Oh, what's Universal Time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Michael Brown reporting. Former U.S. National Security Advisor Michael Flynn is offering to testify in the Congress investigation into the Trump campaign and Russia in exchange for the immunity from prosecution. Flynn was forced to resign as President Trump's closest advisor after it was revealed that he had misled Vice President Mike Pence about his communication with Russia's ambassador to the U.S. Ahead of the open hearing, Vladimir Putin, Russia's president, denied any Russian involvement in the U.S. election. The Trump administration has declined to comment on a report that two White House officials reportedly provided the leader of a congressional investigation with intelligence that showed members of the Trump presidential transition team were caught up in incidental foreign surveillance by U.S. spy agencies. A ranking Democrat on the House Intelligence Committee says they remain committed to a thorough investigation into Russia meddling in the election.
This issue is not going to distract us from doing our Russia investigation. If that's the object here, we'll not be successful. We are going to look into everything the Russians did to influence our election. We are not going to be deterred. We're not going to be distracted. Issues of incidental collection are important. They are a part of our ordinary oversight, and we will oversee them. But we are going to get to the bottom of just what the Russians did and how they did it, and whether there was any coordination or collusion with U.S. persons, including those associated with the Trump campaign.
Russian, make that Congressman Adam Schiff. South Korean officials on Friday arrested ousted President Park Geun-hye over allegations of corruption and abuse of power. Park has resigned from office. This is VOA News. U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson hailed Turkey as a trusted ally after meeting with Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan and other leaders Thursday in Ankara. Tillerson underlined the importance of Turkey in the battle against the Islamic State.
Over the past 18 months, the U.S. military's ability to operate from Turkish bases has enabled us to increase operations against ISIS by 25% without the utilization of any additional aircraft required.
During Tillerson's visit, the extradition of the U.S.-based Turkish cleric Fethullah Gulen was also discussed. Turkish prosecutors accused Gulen of masterminding July's failed coup attempt. Washington insists the issues are better a matter for the courts. Israel's Security Cabinet has approved the country's first new Jewish settlement in the West Bank in 25 years, while it holds talks with the U.S. on future activity. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu promised new homes for hundreds of settlers forced to abandon the Amona settlement, which the Supreme Court declared was illegally built on Palestinian land. It was later destroyed. Palestinians regard ongoing Jewish settlement activity as the major impediment to peace. The Venezuelan Supreme Court's decision to take control of the opposition-controlled legislature has the countries, several of them, the U.S. and Mexico, denouncing the action as a threat to democracy. The Organization of American States Secretary General accused the government led by socialist Nicolas Maduro of attempting a self-inflicted coup d'etat against its parliament. The court decision follows Tuesday's rare meeting of the OAS, which brought diplomats to Washington to debate how to resolve the South American country's year-long political and humanitarian crisis. And the White House is defending a bill passed by Congress to repeal Obama-era internet privacy protections. A White House spokesman, Sean Spicer, said the Obama administration's rules reclassified internet service providers as common carriers, treating them unfairly compared to edge providers like Google and Facebook. Critics of the repeal bill say it could put the internet browsing histories of private citizens up for sale to the highest bidder. For details on much more news, as always, we invite you to join us at our website, that is voanews.com. From here in Washington, I'm Michael Brown reporting.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, March 31st, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Three foreign oil workers held by South Sudan rebels were Thursday freed and handed over to their respective embassies in Khartoum.
We learned that there are innocent people. Their country consult our chairman. They talk to our chairman. Three people now that are released, they are now in Khartoum, so that those of Khartoum will hand them to their family.
Dark Duke Victor is the chairman of the SPLM-IO National Committee on Energy and Mining. Meanwhile, an unidentified armed group is said to have abducted nine inmates from South Sudan's Kajokeji County Prison. The people of Lesotho go to the polls this June to choose a new prime minister, and Congo's main opposition coalition calls for a nationwide protest on Monday.
We want to demonstrate to Mr. Kabila that the people of Congo have fed up, and we cannot continue to follow one guy who doesn't want to leave the power.
Martin Fayulu is a senior member of the main opposition coalition known as the Rassemblement, and a new blood test can rapidly diagnose tuberculosis. Those stories, plus Samson O'Malley's post and our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Three foreign oil workers held by South Sudan rebels were on Thursday freed and handed over to their respective embassies in Khartoum. This came after SPLM-IO opposition leader and exiled former South Sudan first vice president Riek Machar ordered the oil workers released. The workers were abducted early this month in the oil-rich former Upper Nile state. Dark Dupe Bichir is the chairman of the SPLM-IO National Committee on Energy and Mining. He tells John Tanza of VOA's South Sudan in Focus program that the three foreign oil workers were released without ransom, contrary to South Sudan government claims that the rebels had demanded a ransom.
We captured about two engineers from India working in OBC after intensive fighting between our forces and the forces of the government. We took them to our headquarters, which is Pagak, and then on 18th of the same month, we captured the Palestinian from Pakistan during the fighting. We investigated them. After investigations, those of ICRC, they consult us. Then they say, okay, we want to see those people. These are our mandate. We want to see them if they are alive or dead. And then we allow them to go and see them. They see them. And then these three engineers, we give them phones, and then they contacted their families. They talked to their families so that their families will know that they are alive. We learned that they are innocent people. Their country consult our chairman. They talk to our chairman.
Where are these three oil workers?
Three people now that are released, they are now in Khartoum, so that those of Khartoum will hand them to their families.
Was there any deal for their release? Because the government in Juba was saying that you were demanding some money for their release.
The regime is talking nonsense. We didn't demand anything. We released them without any deal. Because we saw into that they are just workers and their country contacted us. Them, our chairman, see into it. There's no need for those people to be kept. We are not terrorists. We are people fighting for our rights.
These oil workers are not armed. They are not part of the government in Juba. Why would you arrest them? Why would you abduct them?
We warned them so many times that you please evacuate the place. The government is producing oil and is getting money and is buying the army, so that he is now killing our innocent people. And you know it very well. And everybody knows in this world that they are buying arms and guns. They are killing innocent people. And we told them so many times. We warned them. And we are still warning them so that they leave the place, they leave the production place. And then they stop production.
The government is saying you are capturing oil workers to scare them from going to the oil fields.
We are fighting for our rights. We want oil to go for services of South Sudanese. We want to stop this oil not to work, okay? If they have any power to protect the oil, let them do it. If they don't have, it is our right to do anything to stop the producing of oil in oil fields.
The oil revenue from the country is the only source of income for the government in Juba to help them provide services to the people. If you are saying oil workers should not be there and the oil production should be shut down, that means you are also affecting your own people.
No, this is not true. You are not telling the truth. Our people, half of them, that in refugees come in Uganda, in Kenya, in Ethiopia, and in Sudan. Most of them are in UNMISS camps. They are not in their homes. They are displaced. They are being killed by the same government. People in South Sudan are not receiving their money. And this money is going to their pockets and going to buy the arms so that to kill our people. If we have chance to stop this oil production, we will do it. The same government is now claiming, and you want to defend me. You want to defend them.
My job is not to defend them, but I'm just giving you the facts on the ground. How many oil fields are under the control of the SPLA-IO?
No, we don't mind. If they are not in our control, we are there with them. And we will do what we want to do.
Dr. Duke Bishop is the chairman of the SPLM-IO National Committee on Energy and Mining. He was speaking from Khartoum with John Tanza of VOA South Sudan in Focus program. Officials in South Sudan's Ye River State have accused an unidentified armed group of abducting 9 inmates from Kajo KG County Prison. An SPLA opposition military spokesman has confirmed his group abducted government forces guarding the prison and freed the inmates. Both government forces and armed groups claimed to be in control of Kajo KG headquarters, but those claims cannot be independently verified. Tito Justin has the story from Juba.
Ye River State Governor David Lokonga Moses says the rebel group attacked the Kajo KG prison headquarters over the weekend after government forces exchanged gunfire with the armed group. Governor Lokonga says the rebels managed to free the inmates and went with the others.
They were targeting the inmates. They came and went to the prison, and they were able to free these prisons. And when the prison warders retaliated and they started running in disarray with these people, these are those who are convicted. These are convicted with the crimes and so on. They started running away.
Lokonga says government soldiers pursued the rebels but could not catch up with the gunmen. He insists that government forces are in full control of Kajo KG County headquarters.
Kajo KG is in a full control of our SPLA forces. Of course, what I'm telling you is there is nothing called controlling Kajo KG. This is unfounded. The police, the commissioners are there, the WhatsApp and the fire brigade. All of them are there.
Lokonga says government forces in Ye River State are respecting the ceasefire President Salva Kiir declared last year and that government forces only fight back in self-defense. He describes what's happening in his state as confusion at a time, he says, the civilian population is yearning for peace.
And if these people of Kajo KG, they are crazy with the blood of the people of South Sudan, I think one day will be broken in the book. Because what they are doing is contrary to what the government is doing, what the people of South Sudan are thinking, talking of peace. The government is not ready to carry offensives against them because the innocent people will suffer. And these people are hiding at the borders of Uganda and South Sudan.
SPLA-IO Deputy Military Spokesman Lieutenant Colonel Lampaul Gabriel confirms his group clashed with government forces earlier this week. He says the rebels did not take any inmates with them, but captured SPLA soldiers as soldiers of war. Gabriel also claims that the SPLA-IO controls Kajo KG County headquarters.
We clashed with them, they ran, they took off. We released 12 prisoners of war, that is two. And also at the same time, we captured 9 of them alive, and they're here with us at the moment in our barracks.
Gabriel says the SPLA-IO does not want to fight, but will always act in self-defense whenever attacked. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Juba.
The main opposition coalition in the Democratic Republic of Congo has called for a nationwide stay-at-home protest on Monday to force President Joseph Kabila to implement the December 31, 2016 agreement. But the government has called on Congolese to shun the protest. The agreement calls for the formation of a national unity government to be headed by a prime minister chosen by the opposition and an election at the end of this year. But President Kabila has insisted the opposition must first submit to him 3 names from which he would choose the prime minister. Martin Fayulu, a member of the Rassemblement, says President Kabila must be made to implement the agreement because without it, he has no mandate to be president since his term expired last year.
The purpose is to tell Mr. Kabila that we should implement the accord, what we have signed on December 31st, 2016, because that accord will lead us to the election. There is no answer for the crisis of Congo than the election. And the for the time being, to have the election, we should have a new government from that accord. We are telling Mr. Kabila, the all Congolese, that we want to demonstrate, to tell him that he cannot continue to maneuver. He cannot continue to disturb the Congolese people.
But Mr. Fayulu, the government has said that it is not President Kabila that is delaying the implementation of the agreement, but instead it is the disagreement within the opposition Rassemblement that is causing the problem. Besides, the government said the president has the right to choose the prime minister.
He doesn't have the right. It's not true. Mr. Kabila, he has finished his mandate December 2015. Now, if he's there today, it's due to that accord. And he doesn't have any right to tell people that to bring a list, because in the accord, what it said is the Rassemblement should present the prime minister. That's it.
Would the Rassemblement accept, I think, a proposal by Cinco, the Catholic bishops, to let President Kabila appoint the prime minister in consultation with the Rassemblement? Would you accept that?
We, as the Rassemblement, we agreed with the bishops, because they said that, okay, let us have this formulation. The prime minister will be nominated after discussion between the president and the executive of the Rassemblement. We have agreed on that. But the member of Kabila side, they say, no way, we need a list of three people. Is that or nothing? We are not in the accord if we give any list. It's not a matter of giving a list. It's a matter of respecting the accord.
You called the protest for Monday a ghost town protest. In my discussion with the Minister of Information the other day, he said that the so-called protests have not been effective because the Congolese people have not heeded your advice to stay at home.
What we said on Wednesday, that we have launched the action, which will start with the ghost town on March the 3rd. And we will start with other demonstrations on April 10th, and so on. We will have a march. We want to demonstrate to Mr. Kabila that the people of Congo have fed up, and we cannot continue to follow one guy who doesn't want to give the power. Mr. Kabila totally disagrees with the accord. That's why he's trying not to buy time. We cannot let him what he wants, because Congo is a land of 18 million people, and then we cannot obey to one guy who is not doing anything. The Congo today is a disaster, a total disaster. The economy is down, totally down. The inflation is very high. The currency, 50% of its value. And then you have security in the Kasai. They are killing people. Nobody can say anything. They have killed the expert of the UN, and this is not a country anymore. How come somebody can continue to be at the head of the country, but he cannot master anything?
Martin Fayulu is a member of the main opposition coalition in the DRC, known as the Rassemblement. He was speaking with me from the Congolese capital, Kinshasa. Citizens in the Kingdom of Lesotho will go to the polls on June 3rd this year to choose a new prime minister. Early this month, Prime Minister Pakalita Musisili lost a vote of no confidence in parliament after several lawmakers from his ruling Democratic Congress Party coalition defected to the opposition. This led to a decision by King Letsi III to dissolve parliament. The upcoming election would be the third since 2012 in the Southern African Kingdom. Kobani Teko, chief whip of Lesotho's Senate, tells VOA's Peter Clotty that Mr. Musisili is to blame for his sharp political decline, which Teko says would lead to the prime minister's certain electoral defeat in the upcoming June election.
That was caused by the version of North Confidence that was placed in Parliament. And remember, Mr. Musisi had been left by one of his political stalwarts in that party, Mr. Mulileki. So he went with a part number of members who made up bigger numbers now with the main opposition led by Mr. Thabane. So they made 74 members who voted for a vote of no confidence against Mr. Musisi. That's how he saw his fall in Parliament.
Why has Musisi's stock fallen so sharply? Because it was not long ago he came with a big coalition to get rid of then former Prime Minister Tom Thabane, who is in exile at the moment.
No, there are lots of things that really surround his downfall. You can try that when I say, you can believe me when I say he had very little numbers to sustain that big coalition. All the members who came in to make that government were people outside, not from the constituency. They were members of the mixed member proportion. That's how he got those numbers. But his leaving his old pal in politics in the party made him suffer big time.
Do you see any chance that embattled Prime Minister Pakadita Musisi could win re-election?
Well, I do not see that coming. He's talking about getting all the people who broke away from the main BCP to be his partners in this campaigning. He's calling them over to share even votes and to fight together in the constituency. But I don't see that coming, sir, honestly.
How has the people of Lesotho embraced this political dynamic so far?
Well, it's really, people are very despondent because each and every 2 years, we don't seem to be in the position of trying to make it work, this issue of coalition. So they always break down, and it has really come into the nerves of the people. They are now very tired. Do not be surprised to see a very low turnout in this coming election. People are losing interest because they can see that these people are just running for their own political thing, not necessarily to care about the have-nots, the people who are really hungry and do not know how to make the ends meet. So it's only for the personal and selfish interest of politicians. You do not really see people who are committed to change the livelihood of people on the ground.
Do you foresee anybody coming out who is charismatic and who has organizational ability to pull people together to make a coalition work in Lesotho to have a consistency in government for the foreseeable future?
Well, I doubt there will be that type of person who will come about. Well, I know that Mr. Thabane talks against corruption. I know lots of people trust him for that. But now he's got other personalities that maybe would never make him be the favorite to win all. Even if he was to make another coalition with others, they will always tread carefully because of his own personality.
Kobani Teko is the chief whip of Lesotho Senate. He spoke with viewers Peter Clote from the capital, Maseru. Researchers have developed a blood test that can rapidly tell whether someone is suffering from tuberculosis. Investigators hope the test can lead to quicker treatment, making a dent in the worldwide TB epidemic. Viewers Jessica Berman reports.
One-third of the world's population is infected with a silent form of tuberculosis, according to the World Health Organization. With latent TB, a person can live for years infected with the bacterium without any symptoms. But each year, some 10 million people go on to develop active TB, which causes severe symptoms and proves fatal for about 2 million of those people. Prompt diagnosis and treatment is critical for containing the highly contagious disease and saving lives. A new blood test promises to do just that. Investigators say it can tell within a matter of hours whether someone is infected with Mycobacterium, the pathogen that causes tuberculosis. Currently, TB diagnosis is done with a sputum test, trying to grow the bacterium in culture in the lab from the mucus that's coughed up. Arizona State University bioengineering professor Tony Hu, with the school's Biodesign Institute, says the sputum test takes too long to get results. He helped develop the new blood test.
That technology needs 4 to 8 weeks to get final result.
but for us, only 2.5 hours.
Called NanoDisc MS, the rapid TB test takes advantage of nanotechnology to detect minute levels of peptides in the blood. Peptides are amino acid fragments of proteins that TB bacteria use only during active infections. The highly sensitive blood test, described in the journal Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, can also measure the severity of the infection. Nanomedicine such as this, says WHO, could also be used to monitor patients who are being treated with antibiotics to see how well they're responding or if the antibiotic cocktail is the right one. He calls it a form of personalized medicine.
Which means that you can rapidly evaluate the treatment response. That one can really save lives.
WHO says the test needs further validation in clinical trials, and he hopes it will eventually become part of the arsenal in the global war on tuberculosis. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa's Post, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. Good morning to you, Samson.
Good morning to you, James. We begin with the proposal from the Fédération Internationale de Football Association, FIFA, that Africa will get an automatic 9 places when the World Cup expands to 48 teams in 2026. That will be an increase from the tally of 5 places that the continent currently holds. It is expected that a 10th African country will take part in a six-nation playoff tournament to decide the last two spots. The recommendations will be voted on by the FIFA Council at its next meeting on the 9th of May. SuperSports United FC has given permission to the South African Football Association to engage its head coach, Stuart Baxter, about the vacant Bafana Bafana head coach post. If negotiations between SAFA and Stuart Baxter are successful and SuperSports United and SAFA agree on an early termination of Baxter's current contract, the appointment will be effective at the end of the current PSL season. Baxter will officially commence on the 1st of July. This arrangement will mean Baxter will be available for Bafana's crucial African Cup of Nations qualifier against Nigeria away in June. Elsewhere in Ghana, 3 coaches have been shortlisted to take over from Avram Grant: Cameroon AFCON winning coach Hugo Bros, ex-Ghana boss Kwesi Appiah, and ex-France international Willie Sagnol. The 3 coaches are set to be interviewed for the Ghana national team job this weekend. Ghana Black Stars have been without a coach since Avram Grant left the position at the end of the 2017 African Cup of Nations in February. Kwesi Appiah seemed to be enjoying massive media approval to return as Black Stars coach. On a rather sad note, former Nigerian coach Paul Hamilton is dead. The 75-year-old, who was born on July the 31st, 1941, had been bedridden after his left leg was amputated at the Lagos University Teaching Hospital. Paul Hamilton first worked as coach of the Nigeria's under-20 national team before he had a brief spell with the Super Eagles in 1989. He later became the first coach to guide the Super Falcons to their first FIFA Women's World Cup in 1991 in China. In athletics news, former marathon world record holder Paul Tergat says he will stand against incumbent Kip Kino in an election for president of the Kenya Olympic Committee. Tergat announced his candidacy in a statement on Thursday, saying he wanted to create a strong sense of togetherness at the National Olympic Committee of Kenya, which has been beset by problems since the Rio de Janeiro Games. Paul Tergat won 5 straight cross-country world titles from 1995 to 2000 and 2 Olympic silver medals in the 10,000 meters. He's on NOC's executive committee. And Tunisia will host in April several international table tennis events, including the ITTF World Junior Circuit Tournament. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. Is back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. And we look forward to your report again on Monday. And that's it for this Friday, March 31st edition of Daybreak Africa. I'm James Butte in Washington saying have a lovely weekend, Africa.
Hello, Africa music fans. We have hours of the music that you love every day. From the north to the south and the east to the west, we play only the best. Tune in at 0100, 0200, 1200 and 1300 UTC, GMT, right here on VOA Africa.